We've talked about two ways that worship is rational. It's the rational form of life. When we recognize reality, who God is and who we are, the most reasonable thing we can do is to live life with open hands, to offer ourselves to Him with all that we are and have and do. It's our grateful, rational response to who God is and what He has done. And we explored last time from verse 2 of Romans 12 that worship is rational in another sense, and that is that our mind is central to who we are as rational beings. Now, I had a discussion with an old friend during the break, and which prompts me to again say, remember that the heart is more than just our thinking. It includes all of that other stuff. And if you're struggling with things emotionally and so on, that can keep you from thinking well about it. So don't think that to come out of this that the solution to everything is reading a bunch of books. We need to think well. We need to think differently about things. But there are lots of things that we may need to work on to get there. And one of the beautiful things about the biblical worldview is that it's so rich and so accurate. The biblical notion of the heart includes all of this stuff. And we are disintegrated. We are diseased as sinful people. And there's a lot of room to work on the different aspects of the heart. I'm emphasizing today the ability to think, which is crucial, but there may be some blocks that you have even to get there. And I suspect, although I didn't hear the seminar, the one on the psychodynamic approach to homosexuality, that would be an example of exploring the richer, broader facets of the heart, how thinking relates to habit patterns and emotional patterns and all that kind of stuff. So don't understand me as emphasizing something inaccurate the other way. But we as evangelical Christians in America, we tend to be clear off on the other side. We tend not to understand the intellectual side at all or appreciate it. And so I'm emphasizing that. Now, when we talk about renewing the mind, we're talking about thinking differently about everything, seeing everything from God's perspective. And that's a fancy word that we'll use for that is a new worldview. I mentioned that last time I wanted to try to overcome the obstacle or the difficulty that we have, that we don't understand how the mind relates to everything else. This time, in our remaining minutes, I want to talk about the other obstacle, which is, okay, given that, how do we start? Where do we go? And there's so much to say, and I can only talk about a part of it. But I want to talk about this crucial part called worldview. And you've probably heard the term, and I know you've heard it this weekend. The first time I heard it, I think, was at that conference at CSU when I was a freshman. It's now kind of a buzzword in the Christian world. Not everything that's written about it or said about it is all that good, but it's an incredibly, incredibly helpful way to learn to think differently about things. And so I want to kind of give you an introduction to it, a way to start thinking about it. There's a picture of it. A new way of seeing, a new way of thinking. So I've given you fairly extensive notes, and we're going to really motor through them. First of all, what is a worldview? And just to make you much more educated and cultured, I mean, I've done one very high cultural item already this morning. That was to sing my song to you. I've raised the cultural temperature in the cosmos significantly. And so I hope you feel richer. I hope you feel culturally richer as a result of that great art, the good, the true, and the beautiful. The second thing I want to do is to give you a German word, Weltanschauung. And that's where we get the word worldview. It's a translation of a German word, Weltanschauung. And that German word means worldview. So I just thought you'd like to know that. And next time you're at Starbucks, you can talk about your Weltanschauung, and that will impress people. Guys, that gets the girls every time. Now, maybe a little bit more helpfully, think of two images to kind of help you think about what a worldview is. One is eyeglasses. Glasses are things that we tend not to think, to actually look at, but they're things that we look through that help us to see and interpret reality. And worldviews are like that. They're things that it's the way that we see everything. And we tend not to look at it so much as we look through it to everything. And this is a common image of how worldviews work. A second image is of a map. Can't believe how difficult it was to get a visual aid for this, but we pulled it off. A map is something that you unfold that shows you where things are. Okay? And worldviews are like maps. They're representations of reality that show you where things fit. And the major landmarks on worldview maps, the distinctive features, the major landmarks, are the things that give worldviews their distinctive shape, that differentiate one worldview from another. So just imagine I had three or four different maps of Fort Collins up here, okay, that were very different. What makes a map a true map? It's accurate. And what does that mean? You can trust it to tell you what's really there. What it says should be on, you know, Shields and LeMay is, right? That's, in fact, maybe this is the only thing you need to know out of this talk right here. There are multiple worldview maps. They're very different. Just as if there were multiple maps of Fort Collins. They can't all be true. What is it that makes a map true? It accurately corresponds to reality. It actually fits the way things are. It describes reality in such a way that's accurate to the way things really are. How do you compare maps? Say we had four Collins maps. How would we compare them and test which one is accurate? See which one is, if any. Yeah, you look at, okay, this is supposed to be Shields and LeMay. Let's go over there and look. Is it there? No, it says that there's supposed to be the Taj Mahal there. Yep, me, wrong. Okay, you unfold the map, you look at how it describes reality, and then you look at reality, and you say, which map does the best job of explaining reality, describing reality with the fewest difficulties? That's how you evaluate worldviews. Worldviews are big maps of reality, and they have distinctive features. There are certain landmarks that set off different worldviews from each other. And those landmarks are that worldview's answers to the big questions. And in your notes, I've given you this in parentheses there, the last part of this little quote. It says, in a worldview, those key features are the answers to the big questions. Here are some examples of the big questions. What is real? What is ultimate reality? Is it God or matter or something else? What are human beings? Where did we come from and where are we going? What is our nature and so on? What is morality and what is it based on? What is the basic human problem and what is the solution to the basic human problem? Worldviews are maps that attend that are constructed to answer those questions. Those are the landmarks. Those are what make different worldviews different worldviews. Okay? And it's not the case that all answers to those questions are equally true. The different worldview maps are very, very different. And one isn't true just by definition, and they can't all be true. What makes a worldview true is that it is an accurate picture of the world, of reality. Now, hopefully all of that will be filled out in the rest of what